So we are holding on Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, about, what is it, about 10 lines from the bottom, the line begins to rivet. Okay, the last thing we mentioned yesterday is we had the opinion of Rabbi Huda that says Tzad Echa Beribis Moses. So what is Tzad Echa Beribis? We said is basically where you have something which could potentially come out to Ribis or not. Now, how is that different than you have many cases that we're going to have throughout our parak where it may happen or it may not? So Rashi makes the distinction that
it could go up or down, according to Rashi.
The difference is that we're talking about it didn't start out as a loan, we're talking about a sale. Since Ribis Daraisa only exists in the case of loans, then therefore, granted, the Chachamim Aser various cases involving sales because it's similar to Ribis, Agar Neter, as we'll talk about on other days, but we have various kolos in it. One of them, Rabbi Yehuda says, it's Tzadecha, where you have, for example, so you made an arrangement that you paid money in advance.
It wasn't a loan.
It was a sale. So therefore, so now there's
about coin Rava. It was a loan or a sale.
Here we're saying that the last thing we said that according to Shmuel is the Braisa that we quoted yesterday
The big long brisa
of Rabbi Oshia, where we said that Yesh Loi Mutter was not talking about where he actually owed him money. Rashi learns that it's talking about it was a sale.
According to Rashi, it was a sale.
Right.
You can have owed money and even though it's a sale.
That, no.
Now, according to Rashi, Rabbi Safra was a sale or a loan?
Rabbi Safra, he doesn't say, Rabbi Safra's Bapashas was a loan.
Okay, well, there you go. Right. That's the whole thing.
Okay, so.
Sometimes I wonder.
So we'll get to in a second. Hold on. We'll see what Tosfos says about that. One second. Rashi wouldn't have a problem with that because Rashi would say any time it's halva, Rabbi Yehuda would agree. Sadecha beribis is altar. Sabasa is an example of halva. Rashi would say that and Tosfos himself says in some other places that the only heter is when it's a matter of mechira anyway. Since it's a mechira, first of all, so it's not even a halva, and second of all, it's not a question of whether it's going to go up in price. It's a question of what is he going to end up paying him? Is he going to end up giving him payrus, or is he going to end up giving him money? So then you could have whether there's going to be ribis or not. Tosfos,
according to Rashi,
that's how Rashi learns. The Tosfos learns that the distinction is rather something else. That when it comes to sub, it's not a difference of a sale versus a loan. It's a difference of is it in your control or not. When it comes to the scenario that Rashi mentioned of a mecher, or for that matter, the scenario that the Gemara is going to bring over here now of where it does involve a loan, it is possible the malver or the loiver, as the case may be, controls the situation whether it's going to end up a situation of ribis. Namely, is he going to pay off a loan or not? As opposed to sabasa, where if the prices go up, that's beyond either of their control. Rabbi Yehuda would not consider that tzadecha beribis. He would definitely say that's also. Everybody agrees sabasa is also.
Because they don't control.
They don't control the fluctuations in prices, right?
Yeah. Even if they stipulate one price.
Right. Well, I'm talking about sabasa, where I lend you a saw and I expect back a saw regardless of how much it's worth at the time. As opposed to the various cases we were talking about yesterday and which we're going to continue talking about today, where you make an arrangement in advance that I'm going to buy a certain commodity from you and lock in the price now.
It's problematic because maybe not in those times, but in today's times, you can control the price without having the commodity.
Okay, well, you asked that yesterday. Fine, but there is a certain amount of fluctuation that you don't.
It's a lack of control.
According to Tosfos, it's the lack of control.
So maybe it would prevent ribis.
Maybe at least in those cases where it's tzadecha. Maybe. Okay.
I don't know.
D'tanya. So Rabbi Yehuda says tzadecha beribis mutter. D'tanya, as we learn in a braisa. Hareshaya noshiva chaverim mona. Suppose that one person owes another one a mona. But also like the dehu mecher. So he arranges that his field will be sold. It will be sold for it. Meaning, in other words, basically, the loiva says to the malva, if I don't pay back the debt by a certain date, then this field will be yours. It's like I'm mortgaging it on behalf of the loan. So if the seller, meaning the loiva, continues to eat the payrus throughout the life of the loan until the loan comes due, then fine, it's mutter. There's no problem with ribis. Lakeach. Eucheperis also, but if the Lakeach, meaning the malveh, eats the peris, then it's also because if that's a case of tzad echad, because if it ends up getting sold to him in the end, the deal was if I don't pay you back by a certain date, this property will be sold to you. Well, fine. If it ends up getting sold to him, then fine. He's been able to eat the peris. That's not a problem. That's not ribbit. However, if it turns out that it doesn't end up getting sold, namely the loiva ended up paying off the loan after all, but now all this time the malva has been eating the peris, that's ribbit.
Unless he compensates.
Well, that's what Nocturne, yeah. We'll get back to the matter of compensation in a minute, but wait. For right now, we're assuming that he doesn't compensate him. So, Rabbi Huda, whereas Rabbi Huda says that no, even if the lekeach, the malveh, eats the peiris, it's still mutter. So we see that he holds that tzadecha beribit
is mutter.
Because it's only tzadecha. Because not necessarily a given that it's going to be ribbit. Again, if the other guy never ends up paying off the loan, then the field gets actually sold to him, the sale goes through, and then fine, he's been eating payers all this time. It's not a problem of ribbit thing.
So it's a conditional sale based on the...
Based on whether he pays off the loan. Based on the... Yeah, exactly. Amr Rabbi Yehuda, and Amr Lahu Rabbi Yehuda, so Rabbi Yehuda says to the Chachamim, I can prove to you, Mais v'baisus ben zunin, sh'asa sedeu mecher alpira b'loz ben azaya, there was a case with Baisus ben zunin, that was his name, he appears in a few places in Shas. He was a balabas. He was a balabas, but we know that he was a very frum guy. He did everything according to what the Chachamim instructed, and therefore in various places in Shas we bring proofs from various things that he did, that the Chachamim instructed him to do. So this Baisus ben Zunin, sh'asa sedeu mecher al pi Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, he made this kind of arrangement. He made his field a conditional sale based according to the instructions of Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria. The lekeach echol peiros hayah, and in that case, the lekeach, the malva, was the one eating the peiros
prior to the sale actually
being completed, while the loan is still outstanding.
But the lekeach accepted that.
The lekeach is the malva. The lekeach here is the malva. According to the Chachamim, that's no good because it's potential ribbit.
Was the one that had the mezuzahs in Menachos on the temporary dwellings?
It's possible. I don't know. I don't learn that part of Menachos. I don't know. But he appears in Psachim, for example, discussing the question of whether you can make masses with drawings or designs on them, or whether you have a problem that you can take the time making the designs. He appears in a number of places in Shas. Okay. Anyway.
So the scenario is...
The scenario is that the loiva goes and borrows money from the malva.
Right.
He says, I have a field. We'll make this field. We'll be mortgaged The loiva says, if I don't pay back the loan by a certain date, this field will be considered sold to you. The question is, all that time while the loan is outstanding, who's eating the payers? Rabbi Yehuda says, in that case, a baisus ben zunin, the lekeach echol peiros hayah. The lekeach, meaning the malva, was eating the payers. So you see, it's not a problem of ribbit. Amrulai, the Chacham answered him, Yisham Raya, you bring the proof from there. Moicher echol peiros hayah v'lo lekeach. Actually, it was the moicher, it was the loiva, was eating the payers.
It was the
loiva was eating the payers. So what is it? Is it a machloikus and a metzius? What were the actual facts? Who was eating it? So Mefarshim explained, Rabbi Huda didn't know for sure that the lekeach ate, but he assumed usually when you buy a field under conditions like that, usually the lekeach is entitled to start eating payers immediately. So he assumed that was the case over here. And the Chacham told him, no, as a matter of fact, here, because you're dealing with a loan and therefore there was a problem over this, therefore instead the mocher had to have been eating the payers, not like you assumed. So it's not like Rabbi Huda knew for a fact that the lekeach ate the payers, he just assumed that was the situation.
Knowing that the field was not sold.
Because if it gets sold, then he's entitled to the payers from when they made the deal. But that's what we're talking about. All the, throughout the life of the loan. New my benayu. Fine. New. Yeah, it'll be sold lemafrei. It'll be sold retroactively. Yeah. Okay, my binayu, fine. So what's the nafkamin between? What's the point of what's the crux of the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim? Amar Abaye tzadecha beribis tikka binayu. So Abaye says exactly what we were talking about. Tzadecha beribis. This is a case of tzadecha beribis because, again, if the guy ends up paying off his loan, then, yes, you have a problem with ribis because he's been eating payers all this time, plus he's getting paid back the loan, the malva. But if he doesn't, if the lawyer doesn't end up paying off the loan, if he defaults, then it becomes a sale. Then it was a sale all along, retroactively. Then there's no Ribis involved.
So we're saying basically the opinions differ as to the potentiality of the Ribis as opposed to the certainty of the Ribis. Is that what we're saying?
Pretty much. I mean, we're saying again according to Rashi, the key thing is that we're dealing here with a mecher. Even though it started out as a halva, essentially we're dealing with a sale of a field, a conditional sale of a field. According to Tosfos, the key thing is not so much whether we look at it as a sale or whether we look at it as a loan, but rather whether there is control over here, that the loiver has the ability to control the situation by paying or not paying off the loan. No, it's a difference.
I mean, there's a difference.
There is
no certainty in either case.
Okay. No, that's a bit of it, yeah. Rava, Amar, Ribis, Amar, Nas, Mahasik, Binayu. Rava says, no, you don't have to say that's the Machloikas. You could say that the Machloikas is, effectively, you're taking Ribis in a way where you're going to be returning it. Because we assumed all this time in the beginning of this discussion that once the Malva ate those payers, that's it. He had those, and those are not factored in, and that's that. Now we're saying that if the loiver ends up paying off the loan and therefore the mecher does not go through, the malva will return all those payers he ate all this time.
Meaning that they had stipulated that
to begin
with.
Which now, however, the Tanakama still says it's also because when he's eating it, it's something that could end up being rigorous. Tosfos discusses the issue a little bit, in what way it would be ribis if he's returning it after all, but actually the Rashba has an interesting take on it. What it is the reason, so why don't they say to begin with, okay, I lent you $1,000, I've eaten $800 worth of payers, so all you have to pay me is $200. Why is he first making him pay back the whole $1,000 of the loan, and then we'll say, okay, now I ate $800 worth of payers, and now I'll return you that. The Rashba says, a svara, the malva may want to do that because he wants to have to force the loiver to pay off the entire loan, the entire $1,000, because he may not be able to come up with the cash. And if he doesn't come up with the cash, the sale will end up going through. He would like to be able to do that. So he would like to be able to say, you still owe me the full $1,000 for the loan. As far as payers, we'll deal with the payers afterwards, but first I want to see $1,000 cash on the table. And the guy may not be able to do that, and then the sale will end up going through, and then he won't have to reimburse the payers either because it was a sale. So therefore, he has an interest in doing it that way. However, if the guy does actually end up bringing $1,000 and putting it on the table, then at that point he becomes obligated to return the $800.
Right.
But that's it's in that sense that we're calling it ribis amanas lahasir. So the Chachamim would say no good, because at the time you're eating it, it is ribis. Rabbi Huda says that on the other hand, it is clear, the stipulation is as soon as he pays off the loan, that will be reimbursed, therefore there's no ribis.
Is that Tzad Echad is what we're saying?
That's different than Tzad Echad. Tzad Echad meant that he's not reimbursing, but there was no certainty.
I kind of see how you could call this Tzad
Echad. Yeah, but it's not
in Menachos, that's someone else.
Okay.
By the way, that's why you don't remember.
Okay. All right. Omar Rabbah.
Yeah.
Now, we said before, we discussed yesterday, that we had a machloikas rav and Rabbi Yanai. When you do an almona, when you give money in advance, that I'm locking in the current price and I want to be able to pick up the produce later, even if the price goes up. We had Rav saying that you can do that with the actual payers themselves, but not with the dummim of them. You can't get later on the larger value of them in goods or in money, as we talked about yesterday. Whereas Rabbi Yanai said you can.
Without
it being ribbis. Once we see that Rabbi Yanai said that, and we said that when we said, based on the discussion yesterday, based on Rabbi Oshia's Braisa, we said that such a thing is mutter, then once we say that Mali Hein or Mali Dmein Amrinan, well then Mali Dmein or Mali Hein Namrin Amrinan, then in that case, the reverse is also true. Dmehen and the value and the actual payers themselves are also on the same level. Which means, therefore, Opoiskin, Ashar, Shabashuk, Ba'af, Pisha, Enloi. Which, what does that mean? It means you'll be allowed to make such a condition that I will lock in the current price and pick up the produce from you later, even if the farmer does not right now have the produce, as long as there is a shayash of a shuk, as long as there is a prevailing price in the marketplace. Because it amounts to the same thing, therefore we're saying that since there is such a price, then he would have been able to take that same money. Instead of giving it to the farmer now that I'm going to pick up produce 6 months from now, I could have just as well gone and bought produce with it right now on the market. And therefore, it's allowed, even if the farmer himself doesn't have anything right now. Now, Rashi has a bit of...
Even though you don't know if the shower is going to stay...
No, but then we're talking about... Well, so we're talking about shower shabashuk. Okay, so Rashi asks the question. Rashi and Tosfos both discuss the question, what exactly is the chiddush over here? We're going to have, later on in the parak, we're going to have an explicit Mishnah that says, Yotza HaShar Kotskin.
Oh, yeah.
So what's the chiddush that we're saying we can learn from Rav Yanai? So Rashi explains, so you can see the long Rashi over here, Mali Dmein, that takes the whole half the Amud. Rashi explains the difference is, later on, when we discuss that Mishnah, when we get to Sefer Hashem, we're going to discuss that there's going to be a machloikus over there. What kind of shower does it need to be? Does it need to be the kind that you have at different times in the season? You have different prices. You have when people are first starting their harvest, and then you have the opposite where prices are fluctuating a lot because it's low. You know, each person as he harvests, the supply is increasing by a good deal, and therefore the prices are all over the map, the point is they're still all over the map. There's nothing fixed. As opposed to Fakir, you have a point when people are, you have a point when everybody has not only everybody has harvested, but everybody is already selling from what they have in their storehouses. At that point, then the price is really fixed for a good long period of time. We're going to have later on in that Gemara. So Shaar Shabashuk is something in between.
Okay.
So that's the thing. Shaar Shabashuk is right now, temporarily, there is, not temporarily, but whatever, people have not yet gotten to the point, Ba'achlavoy, Ba'arvi, Rashi quotes from the Gemara over there, that people are already opening up their storehouses and bringing boats full of grain and whatever. You haven't yet reached that point. It's still dealing with the individual harvest. However, some kind of equilibrium has been reached. There's already a shaar shabashuk. There's already, you can go to the marketplace and you can find people regularly selling for this price. Even though later on in the season, people are going to come with boats full of grain and the prices are going to find a new price level yet again. But for the time being, you have shaar shabashuk. That is the chiddush we're getting here from what Rav Yanai is saying. Because since at this point, at least there is enough of a likelihood that you're able to take that money and go find somebody else who will sell it to you at the same price, then therefore you're allowed to lock in the price based on that right now. You don't have to wait until the whole supply and then until the whole supply is here and the price point that's established then. However, then they ask Rava. We learned in the Braisa yesterday, in all those cases, we said when we went from wheat to wine, from wine to oil, in each case it has to be yeshloi, or that he actually has it in stock. If not, it's oser. What are you telling me that poskin al shaar shabashuk, even if aimloi? Amalahu, so he answers them, posam halva hachazvini. Yes, but the difference is there we're talking about it's basically a loan. Here we're talking about it's a sale. So therefore, so we're more maker when it comes to a sale, similar to what we said yesterday. Rava had made a distinction over there also between a loan and a sale. We ended up saying Rava himself explained our Mishnah as not talking about a loan, but rather talking about a sale. But nevertheless, Rava does agree with the basic concept that there is more reason to be machmer when it comes to a loan than there is when it comes to a sale.
So now we're saying that a sale is...
So therefore, with a sale, you can be more maker, as long as there's a shaar shabashuk, you're good. Whereas with Halva, you would actually have to have Yeshla. Rabbi Rav Yosef Dami Tabayu. Now, Rabbi and Rav Yosef both explain, my time of Omer Rabban and Poskin al Shaar Shabashuk Ba'afishayin. Why indeed do the Chachamim make it like that and say when it comes to buying that you're allowed to lock in the price based on the Shaar Shabashuk, even though it's not the Shaar of Achlava and Arva, the final price point that will be for the rest of the year? And it's also not, and it's also aimloi. Why is that allowed? Da'amale, because the buyer can say to the seller, can say to the farmer, you think you're doing me a favor by allowing me to lock in the price now? Shkilati vosach mashadi achizri. It's a figure of speech. Your favor might as well be taken and thrown on the thorns. In other words, not really much of a favor. Maya, honestly, because after all, what are you benefiting me? If I had the money in my hands right now, instead of giving it to you, I could have just as well bought it in Hini or Shili, which are names of towns. I could have bought it cheaply over there. I don't need you, Dafka.
He needs him to extend him credit.
No, but that's the thing. He's not saying credit. He's saying, I'm paying you now. So you think you, farmer, you think you're doing me a favor now by allowing me to lock in the price, and therefore later on you're saying if the price ends up going up, then you're going to eat the cost. You're not doing me any favor. I could have just as well bought that whole quantity of wheat right now.
Right. Why he doesn't do it?
He doesn't, because he doesn't want all that wheat right now. But the point is that he could have done that. Therefore, in other words, he's not really gaining. There's no real agar netter, therefore. We're going to say later on in the Almud that the key concept in Ribbis is agar netter, where you're gaining something for waiting to get your pay or to get your goods or whatever. Here, he's agar means pay, means gain. Netter means waiting. Here, there's no agar netter. He's not really gaining anything that he couldn't have just as well had by paying. Yeah, exactly.
But we knew that already.
But that's what we're saying. Now we're explaining why it works. As long as there's a shayar shel hashuk, even if emoy, because the seller, the buyer rather, does not have to adapt to depend on this one farmer, since there is a shayar shel hashuk, there's many other people available that he could have gone to the marketplace and bought his bushels of wheat or whatever, then therefore he's allowed to do that.
Actually, that's not exactly true.
Exactly, he wants it later. But
actually, that's not 100% true, because there's a lag between the change in price, which comes later than the change in supplies and inventories. And even though the price will remain the same at a certain point in time, the inventories have already started to change. So that's not 100% true.
No, but that's what we're talking about. Right now, there is a certain price where, therefore, there are inventories by other people. Therefore, he could have bought it.
That's
if he,
what I'm saying, not
okay.
necessarily.
Okay, but that's
the assumption.
And
yes.
He doesn't benefit because old fruit is just as good as new fruit, as we learned earlier.
Well, the farmer would have been selling him later in the season also when it's fresh. I mean, what he'd be buying now would also be fresh stuff, I guess. Yeah. Okay. By that logic, if you're saying that it really depends whether he's gaining anything or not, mutaluva saw the saw. Why don't you say that you're allowed to borrow a saw with the condition that you'll pay back a saw? Mishum demati amalei. Here you could argue the other way around. That the one who's lending him could just as well also argue, I'm not gaining anything from the fact that you're giving me back later a saw which happens to be worth more. Why can't he also say mishum demati amalei shkila? What's the problem of saw with saw? The problem is I borrow a saw of wheat from you with the understanding that I will pay you a saw later, but right now wheat is going for $10 a saw. Later on it's going to go for $12 a saw, and therefore I'm paying you something which is worth $12, having borrowed something that's worth $10. If we're going to use the same logic of shkila tibusach, then we should say the same thing over here. Mishum demasi amale shkila tibusach v'shadri achizri. Means your favor might as well be taken v'shadri achizri and thrown into the thorns. In other words, it's not really much of a favor. D'amale, because after all, the lender can tell him, chiti dekadchi b'ach l'boy. What do you think? If I had left the wheat in my storehouse, would it have started sprouting and then getting wound? Rashi gives two explanations of Dekadchi. One is that would it have gotten wet and started sprouting? And the other is would it have gotten heated up and then wound? Either way, the point is, you borrowed from me, okay. And if you hadn't borrowed from me, it would have sat in my storehouse. It would have been in good shape over there. So therefore, you should argue by the same thing. In other words, you're not really doing me any favor by taking this wheat from me for now. So why shouldn't I be allowed to take back a saw later on, even if the price has gone up? And again, you're not doing me any favor by borrowing it now, by taking it out of my storehouse now, because it would have just stayed in my storehouse and it would have been preserved there. I would have had it myself at some later point. So now, why should we say that later on?
Prices might have fallen at that time.
That's not the point. But that's the point. In other words, it would have risen or fallen in my possession. So why now should I not be entitled to a saw back? The saw is worth $12, so what? And if the saw had stayed in my storehouse the whole time, now it would be worth $12. I'm not gaining anything from the fact that you borrowed it from me. And again, Amalei Hasama V'Ahachazvi. So again, Rabbi Yosef gives the same answer as before, that there's a difference between a loan and a sale. We can be more makel when it comes to a sale than we can with a loan, where there's more of a problem, where you're closer to the issue of Ribbis D'Oraita. Therefore, we won't allow it. Another one, Amalei Rav Ada Bar Amalei. So usually, yes, we can say Shkila Tivosach V'Shadri Achizvi, but only when it comes to sales, not when it comes to loans. Therefore,
because
a loan is a loan. There's more of an issue of a ribbis with that. Therefore, you can be posek al shar shabashuk, even if aimloy, on the grounds that shkila tibul sukkah, because I could have taken my money and found a different vendor. But you can't say that when it comes to loans. On the face of it, though, what do you mean? We're saying, going back to the case of buying, you're saying shkila tibul sukkah, that you didn't do me any favors. I could have found somebody else. Isn't he gaining from the fact that he would have otherwise had to pay money to a middleman? He would have had to find a broker to find somebody to arrange the sale. Like this, he has somebody who's ready to sell to him, to lock in the price with him in advance. He gains that. There is agar nefzer then on the face of it that he's not having to do that. Amalei, the Rava answers, okay, dekayoyevle nami. Okay, you know what? You're right. As a matter of fact, in order to avoid that problem, the buyer will have to give the seller that amount that he would have had to give a broker, and therefore there's no agar nefzer. Now he really isn't gaining anything by making this arrangement in advance, because if he had gone to Hini or Shili, he would have had to find a broker over there and then make the arrangement there. So fine, he has a farmer there in his town. He's able to arrange it with. Good, okay, he pays him the
farmer's not allowed. He's able to give him everything anyway.
Yeah.
Rav Ashi
says you don't even need that. Zuzi di inshi iu abdulei sapsirusi. When a person has ready cash on hand, that itself is the equivalent of a broker. Because then at that point, you have the farmers and the people who are selling grain or whatever come. They hear, hey, there's somebody here with money who wants to make an arrangement with us in advance, wants to make a deal. They're all ready to make deals with him. You don't need brokers for that. So therefore, again, he's not really gaining. He wouldn't have needed a broker once it becomes known that he has money available to buy wheat or whatever, to buy the crop in advance. Then already everybody will come seeking him out.
They all come out with their overalls and passport.
Yeah. Well, okay, Rashi actually says achamorin, the donkey drivers who bring grain from one place to another. So, okay, whatever. Same difference. Okay. Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef de Amitavai. Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef both said the following din. Hayman de Yoiv Zuzi Atara Harifa. If somebody is, again, Poisek Alapera, so he gives money in advance for the early price. Meaning, here we're talking before Yotzah Hashar, not even before even before Shar Shabashuk. When there's no fixed price, you have the first people are starting to do their harvest, and therefore you have people are selling at retail, and the prices are all over the map. Now, how would you be able to do that? You're allowed to do that if Yeshloi. So if you're doing that, if you're doing it under those conditions, we're Yeshloi, and therefore you don't have a problem with ribis. However, what you have to do is you have to go. The buyer has to actually be present in the granary when this guy is going and threshing and then preparing his grain for market. So yes, he has already grain in stock why does that? We're going to have to discuss. We have to figure out why. But so far that's the din they said. So again. There's no problem, on the face of it, there's no problem with Ribis over here because Yeshloi, he already has old grain available that he could have fulfilled the order with that. Instead, though, this Lekeach is going to be taking the new grain. But fine, he has to be there when this guy is getting the new grain ready.
To check?
Well, that's what we have to ask. Lamai, what does he need to be there for? Elam Mikna, does he need to do that in order to be Koine, in order to make a proper Kinyan, so that neither of them can renege? Hale Koni. He's not. He didn't do Mashiach or anything. Well, what's he going to be Koine with? Are you talking about he just needs to be there, that without that you won't be able to hold the guy to Mishapara, as we learned in the previous perek, that if the other guy wants to, if either one of them wants to renege on the deal, they'd have to accept Mishapara? Why? He already gave the money. Once he gave the money, it doesn't matter whether he's there in the granary or not when they're threshing the grain. What is him being there? Once he gave the money, Mishapara is triggered, yeah. The answer is La'olam b'kabulu yalei mishapara. No, we are talking about he needs to be there in order to make mishapara, in order to make mishapara be able to be in effect. Why? Because of manda yoyev zozi atara harifa. Because normally, when a person gives money, when a person is willing, when a person wants to lock in the price that early in the season, when the harvest is just first coming online, He doesn't put all those eggs in one basket. He gives money to two or three different people. Whichever one has a good harvest is the, whichever one he decides has the best quality wheat among them or whatever is going to be the one he ends up buying from. So therefore, now if this potential lekeach actually shows up in the granary and watches the threshing being done, so therefore he's able to see what the quality is. Samchadaite. Now at that point, the farmer has reason to have smichus das. He has reason to have a mental guarantee that yes, I see this guy is serious about it. He actually wants to complete the deal. He didn't just give me money on, you know, to be on the safe side for that, you know, so somebody else doesn't preempt him. He actually is planning to seal the deal with me. The Eloi, but if not, then there's not even Mishapara, because Omale, because later on the farmer can say, I'm not obligated to, I'll return you your money, I'm not obligated to accept Mishapara for that. Amina Dashkachas Perid Shapiramididi Vishaklas, I figured you must have found somebody else who has better quality produce than me, and you bought from him.
Shapiramididi,
that's better than mine. Vishaklas, and you bought from him, and therefore I should be obligated, so therefore I should be able to refund you your money and find a different buyer for my produce, or I already found a different buyer for my produce or whatever, and not have to accept Mishapara. That is the point. That's why they're saying in order for Mishapara to be triggered, yes, normally Mishapara is triggered as soon as you give the money. And then if either of them reneges, then he has to accept Mishapara. Here it's a special case because Bachachila, you're not giving money when you're giving money, there's not necessarily any kind of understanding that the sale will definitely go through. You're giving the money because you want to be first in line. You want that if it ends up that you're going to buy from this farmer, you want to be first in line to buy from him. But not because you definitively decided that you're going
to
buy from him.
There has to be an awareness of that.
That's what we're saying. There has to be a sniff of that. Yeah. That's what we're saying. So only if the potential buyer actually shows up over there during the threshing, then there is smich of that.
Because then he's probably like.
Because then it shows that he's gonna get from him. Yeah.
If he doesn't come
there, then it means that the farmer has reason to assume, okay, the guy decided to buy someplace else. I'll refund you your money. There shouldn't be Mishapara yet. Actually, then, if you're saying that the reason why Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef are saying that you have to show up there is in order to create the smichus das, in order that the farmer should know for sure that you're serious, that you want to go through with the deal, and it's not just you gave him money in order to secure your place in line, well, then, it doesn't even need to be that he comes to the granary. Actually, even if he finds him in the street, and he tells him, I plan to buy from you in the end. Then also samchadaite, that's also enough of a smichus das, that then at that point Mishapara would be triggered if either one of them wants to renege.
Well,
because the point is there has to be smichus das. And in that case there is. Just as much.
Giving money is not enough.
No, just giving money is not enough. But if he gives money and later on he comes and tells him, you remember that down payment I gave you, remember that money I gave
not
you?
Sure.
I wanna go through with it, I wanna seal the deal, well that's enough. Yeah. Amar Rav Nachman. Klola diribisa. The general rule about ribis is kol agar netter le'osur. Here's the key phrase, agar netter. Anything where you're gaining something from waiting for your payment or for your goods or whatever is osur.
Is this the first time they use the term?
This is the first time we're using the term.
Okay.
Ba'amar Rav Nachman. And Rav Nachman says, here's an example of it.
Even if there's no two parties involved?
Oh, obviously there have to be two parties. How else are you gaining something?
Necessarily. I mean, if you buy from a goy,
you're allowed to take ribis from, and you're allowed to give ribis to. We'll talk about later in the parak. We'll have a little bit of discussion about ribis with goyim, but obviously we're talking between Jews.
Companies owned by Jews are considered agar netter.
Yeah, you'd have the same issue. Yeah, company owned by a Jew. If you want to have anything that's going to involve ribis, you have to do a heter iska. Sure, absolutely.
So if I a major shareholder in a bank.
Banks and things and outside of Israel are owned by, if you're a majority shareholder in the bank, okay, maybe. But I mean, for that reason, the various Israeli banks have had to arrange.
How do they do that?
So we'll later on in the paragraph, we'll talk about the dinim of Iska. We'll get a little bit, we'll get a little bit into that. Again, the key thing of it is that you're turning the loan into a partnership. However, we're going to see later on in our Gemara, we're going to see right before the next Mishnah, there is a key factor in that, which is you can't have what's called part of the schar v'rochav lahefzin. You can't have that gains are very likely and losses are unlikely. That would still be a problem of ribis, even with an iska. So you have to create a situation where that's really the heart of a heter iska, really, is balancing that. On the one hand, you have to have the real possibility of the loiva, of the lender, losing his, not getting paid back, versus, on the other hand, the guy does want to have some kind of guarantee he's going to be paid back. So how exactly you balance those two things is really the heart of what a heter iska is all about. We'll get to that later on.
I hope it doesn't have to be an equal probability.
No. Wait. We'll get to that later. Okay. Vomit of Nachman. So here's an example Rav Nachman is going to give of Agur Netzer. Till now, we've been talking about a case where you buy, where you're...
Netzer, you're, halacha, what you're
saying. Yeah, obviously. Yeah. In general, the halacha is like Rav Nachman did in Mamas. Anyway, yeah. Till now, we've been talking about cases where, for example, you lock in the price at a lower price, and later on, the price of the thing rises, and you're still being given it at the cheaper price, when that is and isn't really. Here, we're going to talk about a kind of the other way around. Haiman deyoyev zuzel kirol. Suppose you give money to a person who sells wax. Because dalit dalit. Now, right now, the price chalos shiver, loaves of wax, whatever, pieces of wax of a standard size are being sold at four pieces to the zuz. What?
It's called
bees. Yeah, beeswax. Yeah.
Beeswax,
yeah. Chalos vash is actually honeycombs, whatever. The point is, standard size units of wax, whatever it is. The standard amount is, they said the standard price right now is they're selling at four to the zuz. And now the wax seller says, because you're paying me in advance, I will give it to you at a cheaper price. I will give you five pieces. I will give you five pieces per zuz. Then it depends. Isnu gabe, if he actually
means five,
meaning five per zuz, so 20% discount.
Why
hey? Five each. Five pieces of wax for each zuz.
The repetition means that the word
means each. Yeah.
This one's five.
So, isnu gabe shori. So, if he actually has the wax loaves in his hand right now, if he has them available to him right now, then it's mutter, because yeshloi. Less nu gabe also, but if he doesn't have it, then it's also, because that would be an example of agar neter. Well, wait, that's the question. The question is chizah. Isn't that obvious?
Yeah.
The answer is loy tzricha, de islay ashray b'masa. No, the chiddush would be, what if this wax seller does not actually have the wax right now, but he has credit by other people in town where at any time he can go and they previously owe him, other wax dealers or whatever in town, they previously owe him, so therefore at any time he can go to them and collect on the wax that they owe him and then deliver.
They have a debt.
That's the point. Mao detema, you were thought to say, kivin de islay ashray b'masa, since he has that kind of credit, but in town, he himself has also done the same kind of thing with other wax dealers. He's paid them in advance, and they're supposed to be delivering him wax. So once he has that, you would think, you would think that it's the equivalent of a case which we learned before in Hazav, and we're going to learn again towards the end of our parak, where you're allowed to borrow, for example, sabisa. You're allowed to borrow commodities and pay back the same amount of commodity, even if the price may have gone up in between. Where you're only borrowing it, where you actually have, some of that commodity in stock, you, the loiva yourself, have in stock right now. You just absha yavibni until my son comes, because he has the key, for example, or absha emtsamafteach, or until I find the key, because right now I've misplaced it. So you actually have. So you would think, in this case, the wax seller, it should be considered. He actually has the wax in his possession because he's able to easily get it from the other people in town. Therefore, it should be allowed. Hamash Malon, no, the chiddush is of Rav Nachman, because the difference is, in this case, he has not actually collected them. The case, we're talking Adshu Yavid B'ni, etc., you actually have the money or the goods or whatever it is in hand, right, in your safe right now. You just have to open up the safe. Here, he doesn't actually have it because he has to go and collect it from them. So they don't necessarily have it right now. They may default on the deal or whatever it is. So therefore, Commander Lesner, who dummy, so therefore we consider it as if it doesn't exist. And therefore you can't make, therefore he can't give him a discount on the price for paying him now if it's not Yeshle, because then that would be a problem with business. So that's what Rav Nachman wants to inform us.
If the grain was stored in these various suppliers, but for whatever reason got destroyed, then it would not be Agan Eter?
Then, because at the time it was, no, but the point is, if it's available by the suppliers but not by him, and it's Mechutz Gavina, we're saying it's no good anyway. No, if the supplier himself had Yeshle at the time, he had wax or grain or whatever. The supplier himself had it, fine, then it's allowed. Yeshle. I later on it got destroyed. Okay, later on it got destroyed. But at the time there was Yeshle. Vamer Rav Nachman. Also Rav Nachman says another deal. Haiman de Oizif Pshitti Mechabre, if a person borrows money from somebody else, the Ashkach Betufaina, and then he found that what? Pshitti means money. It means coins, small coins. The Ashkach Betufaina, and then later on, when he counts it, he finds there's something extra. Now, Rashi learns that we're not talking about anything having to do with ribbis. Rashi learns we're talking about you're borrowing money. You went to, Reuven went to Shimon and asked him to lend him $100. Now he comes home and he finds that there's more in there than 100. He finds it's 105 or 110 or what have you. So nothing to do with ribbis then, according to Rashi. It's just, was there a mistake in the calculation, or was it maybe, as we're going to say, that he gave him a gift or what have you? The Rambam and a number of other Rishonim learn that it is actually more relevant to our situation of ribbis over here, because we're talking about when it comes to the loan being paid back. So according to Rashi, it's talking about when the loan is being taken out. You find extra. The loiva finds extra in what he was given. According to the Rambam, we're talking about that the malva finds extra in what he's being given to pay back the loan.
Then he has to give it back.
Wait, that's what we have to see. If it is something where it could have been a mistake, where it's reasonable that it could have been a mistake, he accidentally miscounted, then he's obligated to return it to him. The ilav, but if not, then we can say he just gave it to him as a gift. So according to Rashi, it's easy to understand. We're not talking about ribis. We're only talking about a case. Did he accidentally lend him extra more than he intended to? Maybe yes, maybe not. According to the Rambam, that we're talking about returning a halva, some of the Mefoshim on the Rambam discussed, wouldn't it be an issue of ribis mukdemes or ribis mocheres?
Saying thank you for a loan
is also ribbis, right? But on the other hand, we don't assume that people are out. One of the things Mephoshim say, we don't assume that people are out to do aveiros. We don't assume that people are out to do aveiros for no reason. Therefore, it is possible. I mean, it's true. You can't do anything. You can't give him a present or whatever that has any kind of connection, or like so you said, saying thank you or whatever, that has any direct connection to the loan. But you can have that. Other than that, you know, they've had a relationship before. They're going to have a relationship in the future, and therefore maybe he is able to give him a present. We're going to see actually.
How far away from Dean's from the Rebbe's to right, and the unbelievable.
Okay. Fine. Well, how much do we consider to be the amount that you might have made a mistake in accounting? If it's tens or fives, meaning Rashi says, and Tosis explains also, in those days, they used to generally count coins in groups of five or ten. So if you find one or two or whatever extra, then it's not hadas toya, then we have to assume it was a matana. But if you find, Rashi says, for example, you find, let's say, five extra, so fine, it means he put up a bunch of piles of five coins and he miscounted, the same thing with ten. Rashi also explains what happens if you have tens and fives. You can also have that it's also possible that there was a
decimal system over there.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah.
And if they used a non-decimal system like 12.
Okay, so Tosfos says we who usually count coins singly, that any amount would be Ruchdei Shadach Toya, regardless what the amount is. I will mention also the Rambam, the Rif and the Rambam mention another possibility of Yisurais of Achum Shaita. What happens, for example, let's say, sometimes what you do is, you make, let's say, your piles of 10 coins, and for each pile, because after a while you have a lot of piles and it's hard to keep track how many, you set aside one coin to represent each pile of 10, let's say. So you set aside 10 and you put aside one penny in the jar. another 10, another penny in the jar, et cetera. Later on, what can happen is some of the pennies in the jar might get mixed up with the pennies that you're lending or returning for the loan. So that can also be b'chdei shadas toya. If you find, in other words, that the extra amount it equals the number of fives or the number of tens that are there, then there's that possibility also that you mixed up what was in the jar, the ones that you were using for counting, for keeping track, with the ones that you're using for the actual thing.
Did they ever did they ever have the coins that have the holes in the middle that you put the string through?
Not that I know of.
But you saw those coins.
Yeah, the Chinese coins. So those kinds of, so any of that kind of thing, there was a possibility that it was just b'chdei shadas toya. You push it, made a mistake, and therefore you'd have to return it.
That would be an easy way to keep 10 coins.
Yeah, there's that. Mefoshim, by the way, the poskim, by the way, discuss, what about if the guy explicitly comes back later and says, you know what, actually I did give you extra, I want it back, do we have to give it back to him or not, or if we have reason to assume it's a matana, okay, he gave matana, he can't take it back. Fine, let me ask you, what about if this guy who gave the money, the lender according to Rashi, the borrower according to the Rambam, what if he's a tough guy, he's not the kind to give presents, my, then what are you going to say? What reason could there be to say you'd be allowed to keep it? So Rav Ashi answers him, sure, but it could happen, maybe he stole from him at some point.
The tough guy.
And now he wants to include it in something else. I'm already giving you money for some other purpose anyway, to lend you money according to Rashi, to return you your loan according to the Rambam, so I may as well, I'll mix in the money that I stole from you, and that way I'll be yoytze the mitzvah of the Heshev of Zayla without having to actually tell you I stole from you and I'm returning to you. The Tanya, as in fact, we learn in a Braisa, we learn at the end of Bava Kama, if you steal from somebody and you include it in the amount you're giving him as part of a sale or returning a loan or what have you, then you're yotze. So this is
a much bigger chiddush to the river.
Right, that's the point. That's the point they say, because we don't assume that a person is out to be over on the issue of ribbis.
So
if we find a way to say that it's mutter, we'd rather we're going to do that.
So wait a minute. If this guy sold more than what he stole more than whatever the amount of loan or sale was,
so he'll have to do it piecemeal. He'll have to borrow from him several times. What about, and after all, remember that we're talking, the recipient doesn't know that any amount was ever, the question is, fine, what about if this recipient of the money is somebody from elsewhere in the world, they never had any business dealings before, he never could have stolen from him before, then what are you going to say? Amalei, fine, but Duma Inish Achrina Gazlei, fine, but you can still have maybe a third party stole from him. But Amalei, so he says to him, Ki Yazif Pliny, Pshitim Inah, when Pliny goes and borrows money from you, Avalei Becheshbin, you include this in the amount, and then I will reimburse you. So you're talking three people over here. Reuven previously stole from Shimon, so Reuven previously stole from Shimon, he wants to return it without Shimon knowing, so he tells Levi, you're going to be lending Shimon money. You give him an extra $7, let's say, or whatever, to make up for what I stole from him. I'll give you the $7, and that way it ends up going from me to him through you.
Okay.
Another case. One time I was sitting in at the end of Rav's shiur, meaning Rashi says, I came late, so I didn't hear the beginning. I didn't hear the beginning of the shiur. V'shamis d'omah kori kori. I heard Rav throughout his drasha, throughout his shir, he kept on mentioning the case of kori, the case of pumpkin, gourds or whatever, some kind of vegetable in that category. V'lo yadayne ma'ikamer. So I didn't understand what is he talking about? What is this case of the pumpkin? Basa d'kam Rav. After Rav got up and left. I said to the other yeshivalite, my kori kori, become a Rav. What is this case of kori that Rav kept on mentioning?
Before Rav killed
him. No, that wasn't Rav. That was Rav Yehuda. Besides which, also there are Rishonim who have a girsa over here that's not Rav but rather Rava. There's at least three Rav Kahanas, maybe even as many as seven throughout Shas. Yeah. So,
I saw three or four.
Yeah, let's see.
Seven.
Okay. Onward. So what is this case of Kori? So they told me, it's like this. This is what Rav was talking about. If somebody goes and gives money to a gardener who's growing pumpkins in his garden, he gives him money in advance for the pumpkins, akori for pumpkins, v'ka'azli asor kori b'nei zarka. Right now there are 10 pumpkins that are the size of a zeres, a half an amma. Right now that's all that's available. They haven't grown to their full size yet. A zeres is like that, right? So a half an amma. Eventually they're going to grow to be an amma long. Right now they're only about a half amma long. So right now you only have that. But amalei yehiv nolach b'nei gamida, and the farmer says later on, I will give you 10 fully grown ones that are an amma long. So Rav was saying, isnu shori lesnu aser. If they exist right now, then it's mutter, and if not, then it's aser. Now, what does it mean it exists? Rashi says we're talking about if the farmer actually has 10 of those large ones available right now, which again, he could have given him large ones right now, and if he didn't, he's saying, I'll give you larger ones later in the season. Yes, Lord, again. Many other Rishonim explain that actually it doesn't even need that. Isnehu would be enough that you have those 10 pumpkins are growing right now, even if they're not an amalong, because they're actually growing at least. But lesnehu, but according to that, lesnehu would mean if they don't even exist at all, if they haven't even started growing yet, then it would be awesome. The question is pshita. The answer is mau de tema kivin memela korovu. Yes, but you might have thought that the difference is pumpkins grow on their own. They're going to naturally keep on growing. Shapir dummy, so maybe it should be allowed. All the cases we were talking about until now are the thing may be available, the thing may be not. Kamash Malan. That is the chiddush that no, nevertheless, you actually have to have, according to Rashi, you actually have to have fully grown ones available right now that you could have supplied right now. And according to 10, well, let's say 10. That's the figure that the Gemara is giving. And according to everybody else, it would mean that you have at least small ones available that are eventually going to grow into big ones. Okay. The Gemara says, Kaman, which Tana is this like? Kihai Tana. In that case, this din that Rav is saying goes according to the following Tanya, from this Braitha, the Tanya. Ha'holach lachlev et izav, if somebody is going to milk his goats, the ligzes his rechelav, or to shear his sheep, the lirdes his kavarta, or to take honey out of his hive. Motze chavere, so his friend meets him on the way. And the farmer or the goat herd or whatever says to him, whatever milk my goats produce, whether it's a lot or a little, I'm willing to sell you for X amount. So there's a possibility over here, right? He might end up getting very little for his money, or he might end up getting a huge amount. Or I'll sell you for such and such everything that all the wool that will come off my sheep, or all the or all the honey that'll come out of my hive. That is mutter because this goes back to what we were talking a few minutes ago about hefsid versus schar. There's major chances over here. You may end up with much more than you paid for, in which case there would be agar netter, because you gave him money in advance and you end up with a lot more goods than you would have expected. On the other hand, there's also the possibility you might end up with a lot less.
So such a thing
is mutter.
The principle of an insurance.
Maybe. Yeah, sort of.
When both are similar.
Similar, or at least, yeah. Tosfos makes a different distinction, actually. Tosfos makes the distinction that when it comes to, for example, you're entering into a contract for payers from a garden or produce from a field or whatever, that's months in advance. You're likely to get a big discount for that. Therefore, you have more of a problem of agar netter with that. Whereas over here, you're talking about the guy is going to milk his goats within that day or the next day, it's going to be done. The same thing with the honey or whatever. It's not likely he's going to give him much, or he's not likely he's going to give him much of a bargain for the fact that he's paying him 1 or 2 days in advance, as opposed to when you're paying him months in advance. So That Tosfos makes that distinction.
In other words, Tosfos is saying that...
So Tosfos is saying it's not really a matter of Hefsed. Tosfos agrees there is the matter of Hefsed and Schar, but there's more the matter. Yeah, with making a contract with a farmer over the produce. There's also Hefsed and Schar. You could also have a storm could come and wipe out the whole crop, but so. It's less common, Tosfos points out. It's less common than, for example, the possibility that the guy will go milk his goat and they won't produce very much milk. So because of all those factors, therefore, here it's allowed.
Are we talking about probability functions?
Sort of, I guess, yeah. On the other hand, Avalim Amalei Mashizah told the Kafakaf Makalok. However, if he tells him that whatever my goats produce milk, such and such, so and so much, I will sell to you for such and such a price, which means, in other words, he's locking in that I will give you a certain minimum amount. Even if the goats produce less than that, I'll go find somebody else who has goats and buy more milk from him in order to supply what I'm offering you. And he's giving him a discount because he's saying you're paying me in advance. Therefore, I'll give you. Usually, on the open market, $10 would buy you 10 gallons of milk. Instead, because you're paying me the $10 in advance, I'll make sure you get at least 12 gallons. That would be agonesa.
Sure.
Yeah. Or mashav kavarti roi de kach v'kach mocholach. Or mashav rechela goes de kach v'kach mocholach. Mashav kavarti roi de kach v'kach mocholach. In all those cases, a floor, there's a minimum amount that I will give you, which that minimum amount is higher than the current price. Then it's also. The Afagav de Mamela Karavu. Now the point is, even though in all those cases it all develops on its own. When given the less, even though
sir,
because Agar Neser, the Afagav de Mamela Karavu. Even though